Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome back to our Mobility Management Podcast. Today I'm joined by Angie Kiger and Jeff Rogers from Sunrise Medical to discuss considerations for choosing a power wheelchair base for people with complex disabilities. So our speakers today are Angie Kiger, who is the Clinical Strategy and Education Manager for Sunrise Medical United States. Angie earned a Master of Education degree in Assistive Technology from George Mason University, and she is an Assistive Technology Professional, Seating and Mobility Specialist, and a certified therapeutic recreation specialist. Prior to joining the Sunrise Medical team in 2012, Angie worked with infants, children, and adults in inpatient and outpatient settings. And in addition to working as a clinician, Angie has served as an adjunct instructor at George Mason and presented at numerous industry conferences in the United States and abroad. Angie is also a member of the nationwide advocacy group, the Clinician Task Force, and each October, in non-COVID years, Angie travels to the Dominican Republic as a member of the Propel DR mission trip, where she volunteers in a pediatric wheelchair clinic and provides lectures to professionals from the Dominican Republic. Also joining us today is Jeff Rogers, who is the Director of Power Product Management for Sunrise Medical United States. Jeff started his career with Sunrise in 2003 as a design engineer who helped build the foundation of the inner workings of assistive technology products. For the last 15 years, Jeff has been in product management, where he has had the opportunity to spend time in almost every product segment, whether it be seating, pediatrics, power wheelchairs, or specialty drive controls. Jeff has been able to see why every part of the assistive technology device is important and why nothing can be overlooked. And as a product manager, it's Jeff's responsibility to ensure the products being produced by Sunrise truly meet the needs of the individuals they are designed for. And our podcast today is sponsored by Sunrise Medical. Committed to improving people's lives, Sunrise Medical is a world leader in the innovation, manufacture, and distribution of assistive mobility devices and solutions. Sunrise Medical's proprietary brands include Quickie, J, Zippy, Whitmire, Switch It, and Lecky. And their comprehensive product portfolio aims to enrich the lives of the people they serve. Sunrise's mission is to improve people's lives, and that philosophy is the cornerstone of every step in the process, from concept development to delivery and beyond. So, Angie and Jeff, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, Lori. Thanks for having us. It's fun to be back on another podcast, record one of these with you, and bring my colleague and one of, I always tease him, call him my favorite product manager from Sunrise, but it's true because he knows my passion for power, Jeff Rogers. Welcome to your first podcast, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Angie, and thanks, Lori. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're going to talk today about the factors that should go into choosing a power wheelchair base for clients who have complex seating and mobility needs. And I also know that Sunrise Medical just launched the Q300M Mini Power Wheelchair, which is a mid-wheel drive power chair that has this incredibly narrow, compact footprint, while it also retains full rehab seating compatibility. So our conversation today is not just going to be about the Q300M Mini, but you'll see me circling back to the Mini as we talk about this bigger concept of selecting a power base that has to meet not just the everyday functional needs of the client, but also needs to meet the requirements of the clinician and the funding source. And since our conversation today is not accompanied by a PowerPoint or anything like that, I wanted to talk less about statistics and numbers and measurements and more about how we can truly keep the consumer and the consumer's family in the center of the decision-making process. I'd like to talk about the human side of this equation and how rehab engineers find balance between what makes funding sources and clinicians happy and also what makes a power chair base really successful for the consumer. So for our talk today, from a professional standpoint, Angie is our clinician, Jeff is our power base expert. I'll start with you, Angie. I know you're a huge believer in getting to know each of your clients, not just from a diagnostic perspective, but on a human level. You're also a clinician, so of course, function is hugely important to you. So as a clinician, what's your bottom line definition of power-based success? And how do you know as a clinician that you've achieved that success with a particular power-based choice?
Wow, that's a tough question. How do you know success? You know, I think a lot goes into it, right? Like you talk about how we have to have a balance for everything. And when you're looking at the clients, this is one thing that I always break down is, you know, what is important to them? And recently I was preparing to give a CEU lecture and went ahead and reached out to some of my good friends that are in power chairs, just saying, hey, talk to me about bases. Like, what's out there? What's the most important thing when you're talking about your power wheelchair base? And interestingly enough, maneuverability, being able to get over obstacles, having a power wheelchair that goes, you know, having a battery life, those are the things that were really important to that client, right? They wanted to make sure that they could continue to go. Now, does that provide 100% success? The chair is functional? Well, you know, there's a lot of power wheelchairs that are great that are out there, and we've got different ones in our portfolio that I think Jeff would, you know, if he had to pick one that's the best, I think Jeff would struggle with that because they all have, you know, awesome attributes. But when you look at the bottom line is what is successful, it's what's successful specifically for that end user or that client that you're looking at. So how is it going to meet their needs? And are they able to use it in as many settings as they would like? Now, of course, in the ideal world, we would be able to have it so they could go anywhere. You know, I talk about how one of my favorite cartoons when I was a kid is the Jetsons. And I used to love the way at the end of the beginning, how George Jetson would press a button and his car would fold up into a briefcase. And, you know, I think about that. I challenge our engineers and say, hey, when can we do that with a power wheelchair for transport? Hasn't happened yet. I don't think that's on Jeff's 5-year plan, but maybe one day. But, you know, really looking at from there, meeting all of those needs from transportation to getting around the home to getting around outside, but then also keeping it simple enough for not only the client to understand and utilize successfully, but also if they have multiple caregivers in their lives. A lot of these folks that need high-end power wheelchairs that have, you know, we call them fully loaded sometimes around sunrise, but talking about all of your power seating functions, maybe they use a Switch It, a Dual Pro. It needs to, no matter what, the end user needs to be able to drive it, but so does the caregiver, if you think about it. So once the individual transfers into bed, how maneuverable is it for the caregiver to get around? So there's a lot that goes into that. Lori, it's hard for me to really tell you what is the formula for success, but looking at medical needs, the client's functional desire, and of course, our other favorite F word, which is funding, all of those really go into making or a selection that would be considered the most successful for that client.
Okay, well, I think that you got us off to a great start, Angie. And now, Jeff, I'll ask you the same thing from your perspective. As you oversee the development of a new power wheelchair, specifically new power bases, what is your definition of success, and how do you determine in the early stages if a new product design is successful enough for you to want to pursue it?
Yeah, and it is difficult. I mean, from my side, I would love to create the Jetson, you know, briefcase wheelchair, as Angie mentioned, but knowing that it is tough. And for me as a product manager, my job is to really listen to the customer. And so it is a risk when we come up with new ideas to say, we're going to look for one or two things that can really make a difference in someone's life. And for instance, with the Q300, we saw maneuverability and making something small and compact to open up an environment more so because of the strict size. So we see opportunities there. But we also understand that one idea or one product isn't going to work for everyone. So we really have to understand that says, to start a project, we're going to go after one or two things. But overall, we see a balanced portfolio of products is what gains us success. Because we know, I think I mentioned this to you before when I used to be the J product manager, that no two butts are alike. So you got to make products to really hit the mass majority of people to see, make sure things are balanced and allow people to have different products that work for them. But when it all boils down, it's seeing the impact of the product that really judges success. So as this thing gets out in the market and see how the end users respond to it is really, for me, what makes us love our job and want to continue to do this.
So you mentioned the Q300 M Mini, your new chair. So let's loop that in for this next question about environmental compatibility. You've already mentioned the Jetsons, and I totally remember in the opening credits how George Jetson's little car, space car, folds up and he's able to carry it into the office. So we know that no single chair works for every person because of the complex and varied needs of our consumers. But when I look at the Q300 M Mini, I got to tell you, I'm thinking this is going to be great for a lot of people because it has a really compact footprint. Even compared to other mid-wheel drive chairs, the Mini has a really compact footprint. And it's going to be known, obviously, for its tight turning radiuses, overall maneuverability. So that kind of maneuverability in tight spaces seems like mostly an indoor kind of benefit. But a complex rehab power chair also needs to do well, of course, in multiple environments. And maybe that's one of the big challenges. So when the seating team is choosing a power base, how do you balance indoor environments and outdoor environments? And Jeff, I'll start with you this time. How do you balance the possibility, for example, that a single power chair base, one power wheelchair, is going to have to maybe both maneuver in tight spaces like in a small apartment while also being able to efficiently cross large spaces such as a college campus? How do you approach that?
Well, yeah, this is where we really need to know our customers and who wants to sit inside, right, all day. I think during COVID times, we realized this really quickly that we as humans need to socialize. And so we can't just build a wheelchair that only works for indoors. So for me, I have to know our customer needs. And, you know, when we build a chair like this that is focused indoors, we have to realize that it's not only going to be used there. So it's trying to balance it again of going, all right, we want this chair to work well inside, but not limit people from getting out and experiencing their surroundings. So for us, this is where, you know, knowing what's going to happen with these chairs and still going, all right, this may not be the chair to go off-roading in full, you know, going into the sand and onto the beach, but to have a balanced chair that will allow us to maneuver inside, but yet not give up that opportunity. So for me, it is really thinking about those possibilities of what our customers are going to do. And so trying to find that balance.
Okay, Angie, I'll ask you the same basic question, but from a slightly different angle. What questions should the seating and mobility team be asking, or what do you like to observe to best understand the environmental demands that a power chair base is going to have to meet for the client you're working with?
Well, as you know, when we had our podcast back in December, I think it was, we talked about really getting to know that client and the importance of knowing what white coat syndrome is and coming up with a way to actually address getting to the bottom of knowing them to the very best of your ability within 45 minutes to an hour, which is pretty difficult. You know, I will say that it's, you know, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but I like to think outside the box when it comes to asking those questions. So for example, I have been known to ask people that, hey, you know, if you could have those brothers from HGTV come into your house and change one or two things about it, what would it be? And the reason why I ask that is because, you know, there would have been a time I would have said my kitchen or my bathroom, or people know where they have difficulty maneuvering or being functional, right? It's like, this just doesn't work the way it is. So by talking and figure that out, if they say, yeah, man, I'd love to have somebody come in and redo my bathroom. Oh, really? Why? What's up with it? Yeah, 5% chance somebody might say, oh, the tile in there is ugly because it's from the 70s. But more than likely, they're going to say something like, you know, the wheelchair I've got right now or my spouse just has trouble maneuvering, trying to not only help me get into the bathroom, but also having the two of us in there maneuver. Because, you know, we talk a lot of times about, you know, having someone get into a bathroom in a power wheelchair. That's all well and good. But, you know, some of the folks getting in there is only half the battle, right? Because they need to have a caregiver in there with them to help them to carry out whatever their activity of daily living they're looking to do in there, whether it's something like brushing their teeth or using the toilet. So looking at what that looks like is something I often talk about with people is, you know, what could you change about your house? No, I can't change that. You know, I don't have a direct line to the property brothers to tell you if I did, they would have been to my place by now. But I can find out, you know, what are their pain points. It's kind of a fun way to engage in that conversation. The other thing is I often ask people, you know, describe your ideal weekend. You know, Jeff mentioned a few minutes ago about COVID, and we know that, you know, COVID definitely changed things. You know, nowadays people talk about their ideal weekend, and, you know, it used to be going out and, you know, going hiking or going out to Great Falls, Virginia and checking out the waterfalls. And nowadays, well, I just kind of have to hang out around home. And I have people come over, or I go visit my loved ones who live in D.C. And if someone was to say that to me, I'd say, oh, cool, what part of D.C. do they live in? I'm not just asking that because I'm curious to what neighborhood their friends and family live in. I'm asking that because if they say they live in somewhere like Grover Park, I know a lot of those houses were built in 1920. So the guidelines for building codes is way different back then than, say, you know, currently my condo that was built in the early 2000s. So just finding out what they like to do is really going to lead to having you kind of put in a vision in your head. That's what I always try to tell people to do. You know, ask the clients, do you consider yourself more of a beach person or a mountains person? Are you outdoorsy? What do you like to do? And get them to quantify stuff. That's a really big thing. That's something that I've learned a lot over time, is that, yeah, people will sometimes present themselves differently in an evaluation setting and be like, oh yeah, like I love to be adventurous. I love to do all this stuff. But in the reality, they may only need to take their wheelchair to the mountains once or twice a year. So what's the practicality of what's your everyday life look like too?
I love that. I love that the more you know about somebody, even if it sounds like you're not really talking about the wheelchair, you're kind of talking about the wheelchair. I mean, everything matters in this equation.
It does.
So it's pretty amazing that even something like, so what do you do on the weekend? Are you more just like, we have brunch around town, or are you more like, we go up into the mountains? That's going to make a difference. So I wanted to also, speaking about mountains and moving around a lot, I wanted to talk to you both about the importance of suspension, because I think in the mainstream world, a lot of times suspension is seen as a comfort mechanism, meaning that it absorbs shocks so that we get a smoother, more comfortable ride in our cars, for instance. But when it comes to power wheelchairs, I can think of several ways that an effective suspension can actually improve a consumer's function, whether that's by reducing the shocks that trigger spasticity, or maybe by keeping a consumer better positioned by reducing how much of that vibration actually gets through so that the consumer feels it. So, Angie, from a clinician's perspective of function, why is a great suspension so important to a power wheelchair user?
I have to actually give credit to a young lady who is only a couple of years younger than me, so I feel like I need to call her young lady because it makes me feel young too. I was very well known to the complex rehab technology industry. She actually runs the Unite for CRT side of things for NARTS as far as a happy hour goes, and that would be Jenny Siegel. The reason why I have to shout out Jenny Siegel on this podcast is simply because I remember when I first joined Sunrise back in 2012, we actually had Jenny join us to do a presentation for National City Mobility's annual meeting out in Arizona. Jeff may remember this. And Jenny came and participated as a part of our session for CEUs. And during the lunch break, we were walking along. And I just, you know, it's my opportunity to get to know Jenny. I wanted to really understand, you know, Jenny. And for those of you guys who don't know her, she contracted transverse myelitis at approximately 9 months old. And so as far as Jenny recalls, she's been a quad her entire life. And so, you know, I asked her, that was back in 2012 when the spider track suspension was first, you know, really becoming a big thing in the market. And I had just joined from a clinical setting. You know, my question for her was, okay, Jenny, what is this is the big deal about suspension? Like, I know what it is on paper, right? Like, I've attended sessions. I understand how it works. But you, Jenny, like, how does it impact you? Her answers were very short, very sweet, and very matter of fact. And she said, you know, it's funny because my boyfriend, because she was not married at the time, but her boyfriend, Eric, actually had been teasing her because he's like, all of a sudden, Jenny, you're able to stay up a lot later than you used to. You're not falling asleep as early as you used to. And they were trying to figure out, you know, what is it that's allowing Jenny? Like, is she taking some sort of vitamins? You know, what has changed? Like, why does she have more energy in the evenings? And as it turned out, like, she started to figure out that the enhanced suspension that she had when she moved over to using our power wheelchair that had that brand new spider track suspension, her body wasn't constantly having to correct itself all day long to stay up. And so that was one of her biggest benefits, is that she wasn't as fatigued at the end of the day. And she's like, yep, pain is one thing. She said, but I'm so active. And if Lori, I know you've met Jenny, or I think you have, and that girl is just active, active, active. Jeff knows her too. Like, she is a true Colorado girl. Having that burst of energy in the evening was revolutionary, you know, to her. Totally changed how she was, you know, she's like, I had no idea how hard I was working to sit up. And then, like I said, of course, other things, right? Like decreasing pain and making it so, you know, she's feeling more safe and secure in her power wheelchair. That's something we hear not only from folks like Jenny, but also from folks who, I mean, can you imagine if you were unable to feel or control your body from your chin down, you're riding along and you're getting jostled around. That to me would be scary. I don't know about you, but you know, we want our clients to feel safe, secure, and that the chair that they are using is not a matter of like the aggressive bumps that you may feel in a older car, Jeff is definitely a car extraordinaire too. You may not know that about him, Lori, so you can talk a little bit about that. But, you know, suspension for our folks, to me, it's the perception of safety. They know that they're safe. They have that feel, that calm when they're driving. So they're not quite as apprehensive to drive.
So I do know Jenny, and she is a role model. She's younger than me too, but wow, she's a role model as far as how much she can get done. And in very professional settings, always on the move. Jeff, when you hear that this is the person you're designing for, these are the people that your power chairs are going to be supporting, serving, positioning. From a design perspective, how do you integrate suspension with the rest of the power chair? And what do you, from a design perspective, expect your suspension to achieve? And you can use the Q300 Mini as an example if that's a good fit, or another chair in Sunrise's portfolio. But what ideally would you, from a design perspective, want that suspension to be able to do for your consumers?
Yeah, like I say, for me, it's interesting. Like Angie had referred to, I think, you know, first and foremost, people go to the end user and that fatigue. I am a classic car guy, and I think about suspension and classic cars kind of like the old E&J wheelchairs, the old power chairs, where they basically had no suspension, and how much people just couldn't tolerate being in those chairs for any amount of time. And we've seen this evolution, and the fatigue on individuals has decreased so greatly, just like Angie alluded to. But what we're also seeing is the demands on the chairs are so much more. I think about one thing right off the top of my head is SEMI, where we now have these chairs drive at 3 miles per hour when the chair is fully lifted, fully elevated. And we see that the suspension needs to handle that, not only from a ride comfort like we talked about, but also from a safety, and just to guarantee that they're going to be secure and positioned where they need to when those type of things are, you know, being utilized. So when we start thinking about designing these chairs, we really have to understand the full picture here, from the ride comfort to how the different functions of the chair can impact that suspension. But overall, we've seen the newer technology, whether it be the 300 or our Q700, those type of chairs, the suspension is really evolving to make sure that all those things come into play, that the person's secure, that he or she can overcome the obstacles that are coming into their day-to-day lives. Because that's the other thing, right? The environment, just being able to maneuver and not letting small obstacles, you know, ruin your day because you can't get up or get around what you need to. So from my standpoint, there's a lot of things that go into it, and just making sure that that individual can gain their independence and freedom through this chair is, you know, what we really think about through most of it.
So let's talk about that environment in the next question that I'm going to ask, because I wanted to talk about also drive wheel configuration. So front wheel, mid wheel, rear wheel drive. We tend to hear a lot currently about mid wheel drive because of that configuration's terrific turning abilities, especially in tight spaces, elevators, small apartments, etc., bathrooms. So given mid wheel drive's maneuvering abilities, is there still a need for the other drive wheel configurations? Do you still have consumers saying, no, I really, really need, for example, I love front wheel drive and that's what I want? Or is this largely a mid wheel drive sort of world right now?
I'll take that one, because from the clinical side of things, definitely. And then I'll pitch it over to you, Jeff. But Jeff hears this a lot from our clinicians that we consult with too, and for me, is that choice is absolutely. Of course, from a manufacturer standpoint, you may have products, you know, or like a configuration or something that decreases in the number of sales where it just doesn't make sense in order to keep manufacturing it from a financial standpoint. But honestly, I don't see the desire for front wheel, rear, or hybrid, which I'll let Jeff kind of explain what rear wheel hybrid is. I don't see those leaving anytime real, real soon, primarily because some of our folks, they've only ever driven one drive wheel. For example, went over to the local rehab hospital here a few years ago after I'd left HSC, which is where I worked full time. And I went over to go interact with a friend of mine who worked over at National Rehab Hospital. It's an adult care facility. And while I was standing there talking to my friend who was the rehab engineer, we just got back from lunch, a therapist came up to me and said, hey, you know, aren't you Angie Kiger? I said, I am. You know, what can I do for you? And she said, well, I've got this situation. Like, I know that you're a guru with power, and got the situation where I've got a client who's attempting to drive a new power wheelchair demo. And, you know, I thought it would be great. I thought this would be the best thing since sliced bread. The rep came in here, said it was the greatest thing in the world. And the client's just not really having success with it. And she's just really wants to not use this mid-wheel drive, you know, this chair. And so I was like, okay. I said, well, you know, I will, you know, be non-brand biased as I can. I said, just, you know, kind of off the top of my head, I can't give you full recommendations, but let's just see, you know, what can I do? So I came over there and she was not trying our brand of chair. But to me at that point, it didn't really matter because I instantly could figure out what was going on as soon as I asked the first question. And I was like, oh, hey, how are you doing today? And she's like, oh, I'm good. I was like, so tell me about yourself. You know, how many years have you been in a wheelchair? And she told me, and then I said, oh, you know, what wheelchairs have you driven in those 20 years you've been in a wheelchair? And as I'm listening to her go through the different models that she's driven, different brands that she's driven, they were all rear-wheel drive chairs. So I looked at the therapist and I said, hey, do you happen to have a demo chair that's a rear-wheel drive chair? And she's like, ah, I think so. I said, give that a whirl with her. I said, I think you're going to see better success there. And as we talked through it, I was only there for about 15 minutes. It turns out that this woman had raised children, you know, driving around in her rear-wheel drive power chair. And she had built her entire home around her rear-wheel drive power chair. And just because mid-wheel drive had these newfangled, you know, bells and whistles that were allowing her to have a smaller turning radius and allow her to drive when she's elevated, she was willing to give all of that up because she was like, I don't like the way it drives. It doesn't feel right. So from my standpoint, I see pros and cons for everybody, for every type. That's why you have to have as many choices, but also know how to walk through each of them. And maybe that could be another podcast we do down the road. Lori is really looking at kind of making that decision because it's not just about the drive wheel. However, drive wheel and the feel of the drive actually does play a pretty significant role in the end user's experience, thus their success with driving a power wheelchair.
Yeah, Angie, like I say, to add on to that, I think, you know, we've definitely seen the industry migrate to mid-wheel, and that's become by far the choice, you know, in the market. However, as you mentioned, people that have historically been in one type of drive wheel configuration just love the feel. And that's one of the things that we did was try to help people migrate over. We have the hybrid chair, which is a rear wheel drive, but the drive wheel is pushed further forward. So you still get some of the benefits of the tight turning radius, but yet you still get some of the feel of the rear wheel drive. So we're trying to help that because we know there's so much, to me, there's so much more advantages of being able to have that mid wheel drive. I think about the tight turning radius, right? You know, going into a bathroom and turning around and coming back out is sometimes impossible in a rear wheel or a front wheel drive. And there's only choice is that mid wheel. So your home will a lot of times kind of dictate that. But I also do think that the technology that has really been driven, I think about all the advancements in the mid wheel drive realm hasn't really gone off into the front wheel and rear wheel just yet. I see it coming with time though. As you said, there will always, I think, be the need for those drive wheel configurations. And I think some of this development that we've seen in the mid-wheel will start to migrate more into these other chairs. And I think down the road, I think mid-wheel will still be the chair of choice, but I don't think you'll ever lose the front and rear-wheel drive chairs just because there's always going to be some needs out there that people won't want to let go of for sure.
So for my last kind of big question, we were talking about consumer choice just now and how important that is. So I wanted to circle back to where we started, which is the human side of any equation. Anytime we're in clinic, keeping the person at the center is a challenge. And I know, Angie, you're a huge fan of asking even sorts of unorthodox questions, such as you said, if HGTV could come to your home and make a couple of design changes to it, what would those changes be? And Jeff, I know from the product development side that you and your team have to take everything that consumers want to achieve in all the different environments they want to be in, and basically create a mobility vehicle that's going to support them and help them reach their goals, no matter how diverse those goals are. So my question to both of you is, when you have to meet the requirements of so many different stakeholders, the funding sources, the referral sources, clinicians, suppliers, but yet at the center, you want to keep the consumer. How do you do that? Do you have any advice to people who are struggling to sort of keep the consumer at the center of the decision-making process?
To me, that question is really kind of hard to answer, simply because why would you not keep the consumer at the center of your decisions? They truly are, at the end of the day, the folks that are going to, you know, from a manufacturer standpoint, they're the people we have to keep happy and keep coming back to say, yeah, I choose their chair, right? You know, I understand the funding source requirements and, you know, where we are with a few things there, but that's a tough one to answer because my brain, I don't even think I can comprehend that, Lori, is that how, like, why would you not keep the consumer at the front of that? And I think for me, it's reminding folks at the end of the day, it's like, we are not a commodities industry. You know, we're not an iPhone. We're not a car. You know, we're not at your consumer electronics shows, unless there's like some fancy new technology that's coming out there, because the folks that consume or utilize this, they're medically necessary. So it's not just something that's one size fits all. It always has to be, how do you enhance that client's life? Our mission says is we're improving people's lives. So I don't know what Jeff's going to say about this, but I definitely say that it's a no-brainer to me, is that you just always keep the consumer at the front end of the decision. You have to. Jeff?
Yeah, I say, Angie, I will say it's probably easier for you being a clinician because you interact with the people as much as you do. I would say when I first started with the company, I was not customer focused because I was in a office looking at a wheelchair and didn't really understand. Of course, this was early on in my career, not understanding what it is we were building. But as I went on in the industry and started being able to get out into the field and be able to see the clients and the consumers that we help grant independence to, that's one of the reasons why I've been here for almost 20 years, is because of what we're doing for these individuals. And so for me, I'm able to make products that grant mobility, let them achieve independence, and ultimately improve people's lives, like our tagline says. But yes, I think we always have to, and there's going to be other factors out there, whether it be funding, dealers, or clinicians that have their own laundry list of things that they want. But for us internally, we always have to take a step back and go run this through the funnel that says, is this good for the consumer, and not let it get, you know, out of our mindset or out of our field of view, because that's something that can easily be done if you're not always interacting with our clients and making sure that what we're building is truly, you know, helping them. So for me, it is now, but at the start with, this is something that I really encourage new people that start within the organization to get out, to understand, and to really see how our products make a difference. And I think now I've even taught my kids to do that. As we go down the street, I look at a wheelchair and go, Dad, is that one of yours? Or, you know, oh, look at what they can do and look at how they're driving, or this person can stand up in this chair. So even they're starting to see it now and seeing the products we make, how they can help people. So yes, definitely consumer focus now, and it has to be for sure.
Okay, I love that maybe it is for newer people in the industry a matter of going to an Abilities Expo or going someplace shadowing an ATP, maybe in clinic, so that you can get that experience and see exactly who you are working for. Because I think if you see someone like Jenny Siegel, it gets really easy not only to understand that she has very different needs from perhaps the person you saw this morning in clinic, but also pretty motivating, I think, to see the consumers and what they're able to do with great mobility and seating. So, Angie, Jeff, thank you so much for your time. We're going to wrap up our podcast now, but it was wonderful to have Angie Kiger and Jeff Rogers from Sunrise Medical to share their insight. Jeff and Angie, really appreciate your joining us today on the podcast. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Lori.
Yeah, thank you, Lori.
And I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Sunrise Medical. Sunrise Medical understands that no one client or clinical practice is exactly like another. So to address this challenge, Education in Motion was created as a go-to resource for clinicians needing to stay up to date on the latest information in the complex rehab industry. To learn more, you can visit sunrisemedical.com. And I'd like to also put a personal plug in for this resource, and not just because Angie is one of the clinicians who works on it diligently. This is written for clinicians by clinicians, but I've turned to Education in Motion a number of times for help on clinical information education, different topics. And I also really appreciate the clinician-written blogs, which offer a much more personal perspective. So I think Education in Motion does a tremendous job of making clinical concepts really approachable, and I think any rehab stakeholder actually could find it helpful. So go check that out. And thanks for being with us today. Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our upcoming podcasts is to subscribe, and you can also go to our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll be back again soon.